Welcome to Recast, presented by the Baptist Union of Scotland. Each episode will look at a key issue of mission or discipleship for church leaders in Scotland. We will be bringing you key voices, practical insights and unique stories, all focused on the church in Scotland.
Welcome to the Recast. I'm Glenn Innes and I am delighted to be here with my friend Lisa again. Hi Lisa.
Hi Glenn. Hi everybody that's listening.
Good. We're continuing our series thinking about what it is to be a healthy leader just now. And I don't know about you Lisa, but I've enjoyed recording all of these podcasts and I use enjoyed in inverted commas because they've all been a little challenging and provocative, I think.
Yeah, definitely that. And it's when you're supposed to be being like a, you know, the interviewer and you hear this thing and you think, oh my goodness, I should really think about that. But that's a good thing, isn't it? When you feel challenged by the conversations that you're having and you want to dig deeper into the areas that we're exploring. So yeah, really good.
And I think the conversation we've got today is another one of those with Phil Knox and Sheridan Boysey. And these were two guys that you knew. So tell us a little bit about them.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason that we've got them on this podcast is because they're both exploring at quite some depth the idea of friendship, which I think is not something that we've talked about a whole lot, is it? We kind of assume that we have friends and we know how to do friends. And both of them coming from slightly different perspective. Phil Knox is an evangelist, works with the Evangelical Alliance, but really looking into this area of friendship and what that feels like. And Sheridan Boysey, who's been a radio producer, a broadcaster, and again, looking into something called Friendship Lab, just digging deep into why we have friendships, what's going on with them, why we find it difficult. But it's just brilliant chatting to them, wasn't it? Lots of energy in the room.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really good fun. So, yeah, I hope that comes across in the recording and that this is not only entertaining but useful for you as you listen to me. Enjoy the interview.
So today for our podcast, we're joined by two people. Glenn and I are joined by two people, which is a bit exciting, isn't it? So hopefully we'll speak less and they'll speak more, which will be a great blessing to everybody. So we have with us Phil Knox and Sheridan Boysey. And I'm going to ask you guys to introduce yourselves a little bit. And today we're looking at friendship and leadership. So perhaps you might want to say a little bit about why you're pursuing this idea of friendship and why we might have invited you to talk particularly about this. So Phil, how about we start with you? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Right. Hi, everybody. My name is Phil Knox. I'm an evangelist and missiologist at the Evangelical Alliance across the UK. I'm also a local church leader, part of the leadership team of a church in Birmingham in the middle of England. I'm a dad, I'm a husband, I'm a friend, and it's a real joy. And just, I guess we'll talk a lot about why friendship, but just want to say for a podcast on leadership, to be talking about friendship is just such a big deal. And so thank you for addressing this really important issue.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that. We did something right, Lisa.
Yay. It's taken a while, hasn't it? Sheridan, tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. Well, I'm an author, broadcaster, speaker, and most recently charity founder, which is still bemusing to me. So having gone on a retreat back in 2019, really praying about what the next kind of season of life should look like, the idea of friendship really came very heavily to me on that. And I thought I would do what I would normally do, which is go and write a book about it. So I started researching a book on adult friendship, and all these years later, found very, very rapidly that I was being called actually to start a charity which is called Friendship Lab, friendshiplab.org, to help us all have the wisdom and skills in order to make our friendships thrive. We have completely and utterly ignored this most vital of friendships, and Phil and I are absolutely on the same page about this. Friendship is so incredibly valuable. It's so incredibly powerful, and yet it is our most ignored relationship in both culture and church, actually. And so we've kind of joined forces to try and rectify that.
That's brilliant. And just in case anyone wants to hear more of you after this podcast, you're both on Radio 2. I mean, you have to get up super early to hear Phil, but, you know, if you're one of those people, 5:45, did you say?
And I'm in the equivalent of the Championship, whereas Sheriff is Premier League Champions League.
Exactly.
He's on the big time, you know.
That 7:15 breakfast slot.
But actually, just for Phil's sake, there is actually a third slot that is overnight. I think it airs at something like 3 a.m. Oh. And Phil didn't actually do that. Normally, you start at the 3 a.m. slot, and then you progress to the 5:45. What does that say to you, my brothers and sisters,
about Phil Knox? Sheridan,
he slips straight into 5:45, and then later on, about 13 years later, then you get to 7:15.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys.
So, Sheridan, I guess you kind of started us down the track of actually just asking, why is friendship important? And actually, you said something there that I think is where I kind of want to kick this off, which is, why is it ignored? You said, you know, it's ignored both in culture and in the church. So why do we ignore it?
Okay, let's start with the culture first, then we'll move to church. Culture, when you look at the research, the big barriers to friendship are basically three or four. There is busyness. Second one is mobility. And speaking as somebody who's moved, you know, two countries and like five major cities and some like 12 house moves, you know, we know all about that. And especially pastoral leaders, you all know all about that. Third one is shyness. Mm. And fourth one, I think, is just simply because romance gets all the oxygen. And so we as a culture have completely focused on romance. You open up Spotify, and I know that you push aside your praise and worship lists for a time being and just go and search and try and find me one song on friendship. You will, and it'll be a mere drop in an ocean of love songs. So as a culture, we have completely ignored friendship. In church, we've been suspicious of it. And this in many ways goes back to a book that probably very few of us have read, but a book by Anders Nygren called Agape and Eros. Mm-hmm. And Anders' ideas about love have so influenced our idea about love, even if we haven't read that book, German theologian writing in the 1930s, but his general idea was agape love is God's good, holy, pure, divine love. Eros is horrible, human, fallen, dirty love. Where did he put philia, the Greek word for friendship? He put it as a subset of eros.
Oh, wow.
And so friendship, because it seeks something in return, friendship isn't friendship unless it's mutual, unless it's reciprocated, because it seeks something in return is in some way inherently flawed. And that has been a part of, I think, part of the modern ignoring of friendship in the church, because we've preached lots of sermons on agape love, sacrificial love, going the extra mile, turning the other cheek, loving those who are unlovely, reaching out to the edges of society. And I would say, amen, amen, amen. Let's keep on doing that. But philia also has a wonderful place in the Christian life as well.
Yeah, that's, I'd say our ability to marginalise it is absolutely extraordinary. And I was with a colleague a few months ago, and she said, we're really excited. We're doing a series on relationships. And I'm like, brilliant. I thought she was teeing it up perfectly. And she said, you know, we're doing a session on marriage. We're doing a session on singleness. We're doing a session on family. And I'm like, I was waiting for the friendship punchline, and it never came. And I'm like, and friendship? And it just wasn't there. And for her, I think they'd kind of just forgotten or not even considered it. So, you know, for me, it is, I think it's Kevin DeYoung who says it's the most important, least talked about relationship in the church. And we agree.
Oh, and I guess it has, you know, if I put my mission hat on, the fact that we can't make friends is really significant, but that's not what this podcast is about. So perhaps we'll come back to that conversation another day. But I do think, it would be interesting just to broaden a little bit here about if that's why we ignore it or how we marginalize friendship. Let's answer the positive question. Why is friendship important? Why does it matter? Phil, you got any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, one of the things that I kind of researched massively, so my interest in friendship came because I had a terrible pandemic. So I said, like Sherry said, I'm an author. My first book came out in March 2020, which, as you'll recall, was the week all the bookshops closed. So I can't tell you how discouraged and disappointed I was. And then a couple of weeks later, we found out far more poignantly and tragically, my mum, who'd been battling cancer for about 6 months, that cancer was terminal. And so she went to be with Jesus on the 8th of June. But I can't tell you what a difference friendship made during that time. You know, it was, we were so loved. We didn't cook a meal for about 3 months because people just kept turning up with freezer meals. Our kitchen was full of cards, our living room full of flowers. It was extraordinary. And it was at a time when we were kind of socially distanced, but also at a time when I needed people more than ever. And so one of the things that I did was just kind of reflecting on some of that, reflected on and tried to read as much as I could on how good friendship is for us. And so really began to kind of unpick it from a kind of theological level and a sociological level and even a kind of scientific level. And Glenn, your wife, the GP, might, I don't know how much stats on this, but scientifically, you can eat terribly, you can smoke, drink, do no exercise, and yet if you've got good friends, you will live longer than someone who's socially isolated but keeps himself in shape. So there's a line in my book that says it's better to eat kebabs with friends than salad on your own. And if you put that on my gravestone next to a kebab, you're very welcome to. Because I stand by all the scientific evidence basically says it's friendship is that good for us scientifically. Yeah. But really, science is only telling us what God already knew. Mm-hmm. Because in the creation narratives, 8 times God says things are good or very good before the first thing that's not good, it's not good for man to be alone. And I think we so often, and again, we've become so individualistic because the winds of culture have blown so long in that direction, which is one of the reasons friendship's a challenge. But even in terms of our theology, we sing silly songs like "All I Need Is You, Jesus." And that's of course, we can see the sentiment behind those around our desperation and need for God. But that's not what the Bible says, because the Bible seems to communicate really clearly. We need each other. So on every level, as I've kind of unpicked the power of friendship, it's just extraordinarily good for us because ultimately we were created for it.
Amazing.
Can't add too much to that. But if you keep on going down that little rabbit hole of research, you find that those who have close friends have lower levels of risk of dementia, Alzheimer's, higher sense of meaning and purpose in life, greater buffers against depression and anxiety, even 7 years longer lifespans. Some research has likened friendship to the power of morphine in terms of its ability to actually help you to face pain, physical pain.
Wow.
And we also know that if you have close friendships, you'll have a better marriage, because actually the marriage doesn't have all the weight of the relational needs of the other person, which says a lot actually for males today, because again, time after time, survey after survey, many men will say, "Oh yeah, I've got a close friend. It's my wife. She's my best friend." And I'll say, "You're great, but you need others as well as that, because she can't handle the whole weight of all your relational needs. And she needs friends as well. When the business goes south, we need more than colleagues, we need friends. When we have trouble in our marriage and trouble in our family, we need more than our marriage partner, we need more than our family, we need our friends to turn to." When you have those friends, you've actually got a real buffer against the storms of life.
Thought I'd also state for the record the position of Phil Knox and the Evangelical Alliance is that you should be healthy and have good friends, but if you're going to choose one over unhealth, or choose friendship.
I'm glad you clarified that, Phil, because having only met you about 20 minutes ago, I was about to rebuke you. Our other podcast on physical health says we must look after our bodies. God says so. You can't choose which ones you want to do.
So you eat salad with your friends and then you're like doubly healthy.
Look at that.
The way to go.
You'll live forever.
There you go. You're going to have to republish the book now, Phil. That's the revised line there.
Eating salad with your friends.
Eating salad with your friends.
That sounds slightly less inspiring than everything you've just said about friendship, which is honestly really inspiring, isn't it? It's kind of visionary.
Absolutely.
You think, why are we not doing this if it's actually so good for us? And maybe that kind of leads to that next bit, which is you know, some of us have had amazing friendships, but other people have just found it really, really difficult, a real challenge, and have struggled with it. Maybe they've kind of invested for a time and tried really hard and it hasn't kind of worked out. Maybe they felt really disappointed. But, you know, why is it so difficult? Why do we find it so difficult when it's clearly such an amazing thing? Sheridan, do you want to pick up on that?
So if that's the case for you listening, then you're not alone for two reasons. At the moment in the UK, somewhere around 20% of people have no close friends, and around 7% have no friends at all. Some research was done out of Fuller University in the United States, and they went and looked at pastors, and they found that about 30% of pastors had diminished inner circles where those close friends are and those intimate friends are, because why? All of the energy that is in their lives is going into the outer circles of their relationships, into their church members, into their leadership teams, those kind of outer levels. And so if you are in the people professions, which a pastor is, you just find that at the end of the day, you've only got a certain amount of energy left. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what little bit of energy left, hopefully you're giving your family. And so that basically means that that friendship is pushed to the side. Really, you have to have the family and the friends in the inner circle getting some energy from you and time from you as well, because they will give you energy to be able to sustain your ministry. And even though I don't want to kind of treat friendship in a utilitarian sense like that, but if that's the only way I can get you to have a little bit more time for friends, I'm going to start there, because you will then have more time, energy, and joy in your life so that you can continue on this ministry long term.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a really practical thing, isn't it, that happens. And I think that we identify with that around the screen, that it's easy for that to be the case. I mean, Phil, are there some deeper things that are going on there as well, just in terms of why we struggle?
I just want to really reiterate, first of all, what Sheridan said. You are struggling with this. You're really not alone. Mm-hmm. And just digging into a couple of kind of people groups around that. So Movember Foundation found one in three men say they have no close friends. For young adults, 40% of 16 to 24-year-olds say they always or often feel lonely. I think we've got a real crisis here. I think we've also, there's something about the fact we've lost the heart and the art of making good friends. And we've, you know, Sheridan addressed earlier some of the reasons we're not talking about it. And I think there's this kind of stigma almost that if you struggle to make friends and your friendships aren't thriving, that's somehow your fault and there's nothing you can do about it. And I think sometimes we don't want to talk about it because we're not, you know, we don't want to admit to ourselves or anybody else that we struggle in this area. And yet we also look where people make friends. And Sheridan, you'll have the exact stats, I'm sure, to hand, but he's done some amazing research to where people make friends. I think it was 41% said at school. So if you've not got your school friends anymore because you've moved around or that wasn't where you made friends, you're going to be struggling. I think, was it 44% Sheridan said it was your workplace? And again, for pastors, you know, it's a real challenge, can be an often challenging place. And you might be the only pastor. There might be no one. You might have no kind of direct colleagues within your work. That's going to be really difficult. So actually, even the environments in which we make friends, but also just to kind of reinforce what Sheridan said about our relational muscles, we use those as pastors an awful lot at work. So I illustrate this best with my best mate. My best mate's a builder. So he digs all day for a living. And so he physically uses his body all day, whereas I occasionally think all day for a living. And so by the time it gets to 5 o'clock, I'm exhausted relationally. He is ready for friendship. He's most of the time going, do you want to hang out? And sometimes because now I'm an author on friendship, he kind of uses that against me to say, you're supposed to be good at this, you know, we need to hang out. So that's what happens. And so I think that's a very real challenge in our world. All the forces of our world, it feels like. You know, spiritual ones, the enemy does not want our friendships to thrive.
Right. And
the social aspect, all the physical aspects, all of around our bodies, all of those things are fighting against friendship, but it's a battle worth fighting for all of us. We've got to engage with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So school, workplace, neighborhood, some of those areas are the big places in which we make friends. And then when you have the pandemic effect as well, a good deal, I think it's still something like 30% of businesses have not got back to a regular office day for workers. So churches will be affected by that as well. So it's just fewer and fewer places in which we can actually make those friends. Mm-hmm. And so it just becomes harder and harder.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of hard, you talked about this a little, Phil, but the majority of people listening here are going to be in some sort of church leadership space. And there are, I haven't done the research, but anecdotally, I suggest that church leaders, there are some particular challenges with friendship for church leaders, pastors, mm-hmm. pastors' spouses, where friendship within that church community can be really difficult to navigate from all sorts of different angles, both people wanting to be your friend when perhaps that's not your ideal. Are we allowed to say that? I don't know. I might edit that one out.
Just before you keep on going with that, Glenn, that's really important to name mm-hmm. because yeah. you are up on the stage every single week, maybe even multiple services. And so you've got a group of people, maybe multiple groups of people who are looking at you and they're saying, oh, I love mm-hmm. his preaching. Gosh, he seems like such a nice guy. Saying the same thing about Lisa. Oh, gosh, she's so caring. And I just love to have a coffee with them. And of course, you know, if you've got a church of 200 people, mm-hmm. 200 coffees for you is one coffee each for them.
Well, that's a lot of caffeine for starters.
Well, that's right.
And we're not allowed that now as well,
Phil. Yeah. Better to have caffeine with friends than something. Yeah.
So sometimes you don't want to actually pursue that. And that's a skill in itself. I've had a few church leaders recently say, hey, I want to know the opposite. How do I actually discourage people from trying to make friends with me? Because I just do not have the capacity.
Yeah. Nice to be popular. But yeah, let's pause on this one a second, because when I first became a pastor, I was given a piece of advice by mm-hmm. an older minister who said, do not have friends in your church.
Exactly.
And I reacted really strongly against that as a, you know, idiotic 23-year-old who thought I knew better than everybody. However, I still want to push back on that, because I think church communities are families and friendship matters in family. So think about that idea of somebody saying don't have friends, and what you said, I think, very wisely, Sheridan. How do those two live together?
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because there are some good reasons for that old mentor of yours to be able to say it.
Yeah.
People can misinterpret it. They can see it as favoritism to that person, you know, if you're close to that person versus the others. How open and honest can you really be with somebody else in the church? Just say, Lisa, you have a horrible, horrible day, and you really want to speak to, let's call her Julie, I don't know. She's somebody in your church who you've become more than just simply pastor and congregant with. She's becoming more and more a friend. And you want to go and you just want to offload to Julie. You don't want to pray about it. You want to just hang out. But the problem is that the issue that you've had has actually been another church member. To what degree can you then go and speak to Julie about this deepest problem in your heart right now, who you'd just love some support from, over? But then you're bringing a third person in the church into. That's a very, very difficult situation, and it will be very common for church leaders. So there's really good reasons why that older pastor was saying that. There's some real concerns.
Yeah.
Trying to unpick that and trying to work out how to do so, there's a number of ways we can do it. We can get into that. But I think we do have to acknowledge that there was some wisdom to the old advice. I think we can move beyond that, because otherwise you get very, very lonely pastors. And like you said, theologically, the church is a family. We should have friends there. It should be okay. But can I throw in a second, while we're talking about the problems, can I throw a second angle on this as well?
Yeah.
Which is the pastor's spouse.
Yeah.
And so I've heard from a couple recently of spouses for whom, in one case, the couple has started now, he is the senior minister for a church that they have attended for some years. And then suddenly, now as the pastor's wife, what's happening is that the wife, in this case, is starting to close up, because what can I share with these people that I used to be able to share before? Hang on, some of this is going to be confidential. I don't know whether it can, and she finds out in the end she can only really talk about the weather. So it's a real issue, and I think we should name it. So let's name it before we try and work out a solution to it, because I'm interested to know what you and Lisa have to say about this, because there's lots to unpick.
Phil?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think one of my reflections is it's I've had an interesting journey into church leadership. We've been part of the same. We're part of a church, the Council of State of Birmingham, where been all not far off 40 years of being in the same kind of a state. Most of my life I've been here, grew up here, and kind of as a child, teenager, and kind of now I've grown really into the leadership team in the last kind of 5-6 years probably, and I would say that some of my friendships have changed, you know, as a result of that, and I think to some extent what I've tried to be useful in that, first of all, I'm not the sole kind of senior pastor within that, which I know is a slightly different thing, but sometimes when we go away with friends or have an evening with friends, we just say we're not going to talk about church. And I think sometimes I wonder whether sometimes it's helpful to just go, we're just not talking about church. And that's been a quite helpful line that we've sometimes drawn. I think regardless, because Sherrod and I have talked so far about the power of friendship and the challenges we face, I think our heart and our message would be, just because it's hard and there are barriers, we still need to find them wherever they are. Mm. And so in some ways, there's no good answer to the question whether you should have friends within the church or not. If you don't have them within the church, you need to find them elsewhere. But I think it is possible to have them within the church, but there might be some challenges to overcome there. But I think what we both say is that it's worth overcoming those challenges, because friendship is just so important. And I think one of the final thing I'd say on this is, I think one of the reasons we need to talk about friendship more as a church is so that the whole church realize that not only does everybody need friends, but your pastors need friends. And I think somehow, sometimes I think there's a kind of corporate collective mentality that everybody needs. And actually, you know, there's a bit of sympathy and a bit of realization of the boundaries and the challenges. Once everybody gets, you know, Glenn, Lisa, as leaders of these churches, they need friends. So it's okay to, you know, to really think through. And so therefore, when you make accusations, oh, they're their favorites because of their friends, you're right. There's a bit of context there where we're saying, actually, it's really, really important Lisa has some friends. So cut her a bit of slack, you know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really helpful. And I mean, I'm not very good at not having friends. So even when I've sort of got hurt and thought, oh no, I made a terrible decision there and I'm not going to have friends anymore, I'm not very good at keeping that up for any length of time. I think there's a reality of going, yeah, sometimes you do get hurt, don't you? But that's not unique to church leaders. That's what happens. And so you try and learn a bit from that and you know, you kind of get yourself patched up and you start again kind of thing. And I think, over the years, I've probably made some unwise decisions or trusted somebody and then they perhaps haven't been trustworthy enough. But again, that's not unique to church leadership, is it? But then also have really navigated some amazing friendships and through being a church leader. And I think it is possible, but I mean, different contexts make it more or less easy, I'm sure.
Yeah. There is something. We're here to listen to you. Sorry, but I thought there is something about risk, right? I mean, we were talking about the kind of difference between friendship and the kind of or agape and eros, and everybody recognizes in the agape in the eros space, we're looking for a marriage partner or a whatever. We're willing to take a risk, right? But friendship's also about risk, and I think. You know, there are wise risks and unwise risks. And I think to think in that context and around friendship, particularly in and around the church, you can make those risks and you can manage some of those risks. You know, you said, you know, go out for somebody with a walk and just say, we're not going to talk about church. And the truth is, if you can't find something to talk about that doesn't involve the church, then you're probably not going to be very good friends. You know, like it's really not that complicated. You know, like if all you've got in common is the church, and that's lovely that you have that in common, but if you've got nothing else to talk about, then okay, like that's nice, but find someone else to spend your time with. You know, I think we can,
there is a little risk of overthinking that. It's definitely true about that, that risk matters. But and the other piece is that sense of, I absolutely love what you were saying about it kind of leads to a culture in the church that friendship is important, and friendship's important for everyone. And so it's something about having a commitment to relationality in your ministry that doesn't see you as some distant, far off person, but it's, you're involved. And, you know, like I would make the case that as Baptists, that should be our baseline position, you know, like we lead among rather than from above. And I don't know how we'd ever do that without relationship, which, you know, like, listen, there is the perfect answer. And I hope nobody from my church is listening, because every one of them will go, yeah. So when are you going to try that, guy? That to me seems like, you know, that risk piece, and then that kind of just don't overthink it. But yeah, anyway.
So if you talked to, I think, Phil a little bit earlier about relational muscles, and I'm sure that's a really good illustration, actually, you know, because your muscles atrophy, don't they, if you don't use them and get weak. How might we do that? And maybe how would we be different as leaders? You know, I mean, if we actually invest in friendship, I mean, the stats you've given about the negatives are hugely concerning, aren't they, about isolation and loneliness. But if we were to engage relationally in building friendships, how might we be different, do you think, as leaders?
Yeah, I think there's a few things in terms of building those muscles. I think the first thing is around being really wise and intentional about where we spend our relational energy. So one of the kind of just real light bulb penny drop moments for me over the last few years has been looking at the kind of the finite nature of our ability to relate in terms of our energy, and kind of where we invest that. And both science and Jesus tell us we can have an inner circle of a few people, an outer circle of a few more people, and a wider kind of network. And so what I've tried to do as I've, well, by the way, Sheridan and I are also both on a journey. We are not the perfect friend. making friends and mistakes as we go. But I think I've tried to be really intentional about saying no sometimes to kind of, so that I protect that kind of inner circle of friendship. So one of the overwhelming comments amongst people of loads of different ages, Christians, non-Christians, mates from uni, the whole gamut, when I was researching this, was lots of people would say, I've got loads of mates, I'm not sure how many close friends I've got. And so I think that's really typical. And as Sheridan has identified from the Fuller research, that's really typical for pastors too. So what I've tried to do is try to just think about, who are those people I'm going to try and be in contact with once a week? So for me, obviously that's my wife, because we live together, but also then I've got my best mate, I've got my brother and my sister. And those are the people who I try and have at least one conversation with every week. And that has been a real kind of muscle strengthener for me relationally. And that meant, you know, I really recently, Saturday morning, so 3 days ago, I was just struggling a bit, if I'm really honest. I was really struggling. And I just thought, I've just got to talk to Ads. And that morning, we just hung out for half an hour, and I just kind of, but that came from a kind of, I'm going to be really intentional about it. And then three really quick principles that I think have been really important for me: time, presence, and vulnerability. So time is like oxygen to friendship. Whatever we can do, long journeys, weekends away, time on the phone, whatever it is, there's even scientific research into how long you've got to spend with someone to have them in your inner circle. Wow. You know, they've done the maths. And you can't obviously oven ready a friend. You can't say, you know, we're up to 3,000 hours or whatever, tick.
You know that you can oven ready anything. I think absolutely. That's one of the things we
learned. Absolutely. But then presence, being with people, you know, this is great, a kind of four-way screen podcast, but there's nothing quite like being in the same room. And finally, the vulnerability piece. I think one thing I've observed in my own friendships is when I open up, when I open my heart and talk about, Sheridan's got this amazing model of the levels of depths of friendship conversation and what you've got to talk about. But when I talk about my hopes, my dreams, my failures, frustrations, when I open my heart in that regard, when that's reciprocated, the bonds of trust that we need for inner circle friends begin to form.
Yeah.
And those for me they're the kind of the bench press of the relational muscle pulling.
Yeah.
So good. So good. I don't know how long we've got for this podcast, but you know, I've got
not long enough, I think.
I've got a 20-point sermon that I'm about to start on. So
perfect. That's all right. We'll let it roll.
Go and get a coffee, then come on back. So everything that Phil has said. Can I throw in a few other little phrases as well? Check-ins, catch-ups and meet-ups. So this can be a helpful way of working with the limited amount of time that you sometimes might have. A check-in is just a quick note. It can be an email, it can be a WhatsApp, it can be a text, it can be like a handwritten card. But a check-in is just a short little message to let the other friend know that they're on your mind. A catch-up is a phone call, might just be 10 minutes. It might be, gosh, you know, just what Phil needed the other morning when he was able to get together and just have that bit of time to be able to talk. But it's generally, it might be a phone call, might be a video call, but it's something brief. You can do it in the evening. So you've got, you know, a minute. Well, it is all you'll need for a check-in. About 10 minutes is all you'll need for a catch-up call, and then you have your meetups, and then you have those at least once a week when you're able to somehow get some time with your friend. Now, I would suggest that you have a particular time during your week, and it might be for pastors, it might be a Monday, whenever you have your day off, or maybe when you're leading into the weekend, where you're planning these things. I'm going to send 3 check-ins to, Dave, Jason, and Phil, and I'm going to do a catch-up here, and I'm going to do a meetup with Russell. So you actually kind of planned it in, and then that becomes a priority for you. What Phil was saying about vulnerability is just so important, and we can nuance that with the fact that you don't have to share everything. This is a really important thing, because I think it's been part of the answer for me about this whole problem with pastoral friendships in the church, is the fact that I am no less of a friend if I don't share every tiny little detail of my life with you.
Yeah.
That is actually Hollywood. That's kind of American, overextending, oversharing stuff that's kind of slipping in. I had a friend say to me back in 1999, he said, my first marriage ended messily and I don't want to go into it. And we have been very close friends ever since, and I've honored that and never gone into it. So you can have whole areas in your friendship that you may choose to say, you know what, and it's as a result of honoring the friendship that you actually don't want to press into that door until that person is ready to then tell you off yourself. So when it comes to then to pastoral relationships within your congregation and with your congregation, it is absolutely fine to be able to say, you know what, you are becoming more than just a member of my church. I'm starting to really see you as a friend. And, you know, because of my role, there are going to be some things that I really want to share with you that I just can't. But I'm hoping that we can be present for each other. And, you know, if ever you feel like I'm being more of a friend than a pastor to you, then let's sort that out as well. I even heard of one pastor who had a deal with another pastor in his town. And they had a deal that when they started making mutual friendships within the church, that they had an opportunity for that person, that couple, to be pastored by the other pastor in the church, in the town, so that there could still be pastor congregant, but then there could be friendship freed up as well. Mm. So, and I think a lot of this also comes back to what you were saying, Glenn, about that kind of first among equals that, you know, Baptists have pioneered so well, and the fact that it helps when you are not on the pedestal. Because then it allows you, gives you the freedom to be able to be that vulnerable self. Because if you somehow feel that, you know, if I'm going to really share what's really going on for me, you're just not going to look at me the same way anymore. That's going to be a problem. You're not going to share as well for your own needs and for your own self. So there's a few little things to throw into the conversation.
Really good. Just really so good. Practical as well.
So good.
Attainable. That's really, really important,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Brilliant. So I'm supposed to have the last question. I'm going to cheat. I'm having 2. So you can think, you can have an extra one too if you want, Lisa. I'll allow
so
that as long as we've
you.
Got time. So my throw-in question. So I'm listening to you both talk, and I'm scribbling down here, and I've got this thing in my head about there's it seems to me there are different types of friendships that we haven't really talked about. You kind of mentioned a little bit on the side, but so I'm just thinking of my own life, right? I've got old friends. So I had a really rough week last week, and I had the chance to go and have dinner with three other couples, my wife and I and three others, that we've known each other now 30 years. When you turn up, you don't have to be anything else, and they ask you how you're doing, and you can just go, bleh, there you go. And they don't think worse of you. They don't think, you know, it's just like, that's fine. And they'll give you some attention, but they're not going to wallow you in attention, because they'll take the mick out of you, and they'll do all of that as well. And there's just this space. And that's one space. Then there's a peer space of friends. I've got friends that I'm on a WhatsApp group with every week. They're also pastors. We share the funny stories that happen. We commiserate when we have a shocking sermon on a Sunday. And then, you know, we do a retreat once a year, whatever. Some life in that. But that's different again. And then there's my local friends, which are the people that I see because I'm walking down the street or they live next door to me. And then there's, and the one I've added in is the one in the church, the people we worship with, because, we've talked about that. And I've just done that, scribbling that down. I'm sure I must be missing some things. So finally, to get to my question, is it reasonable to think of us not as a monolithic thing, but actually as having very different kinds of friendships, and perhaps very different kinds of friendship in different spaces of life?
That's a great question. Phil must have a really good answer for it. And I'm going to set him up for his really good answer in just a second by saying the way that we define friendship at Friendship Lab is a friend is someone I can talk to, depend on, grow with, and enjoy. Talk to, depend on, grow with, and enjoy. Some friends are just going to be better at one of those four than the others. Some friends are going to have two out of the four. Others are going to have three. Some are going to have four out of the four. The four out of the four you're going to be really, really close with, especially as time goes on and you develop that depth of history, like you were talking about, Glenn, with those three other couples. But you know what? There is a place for those who are particularly good in one of the four, and you're not going to be the closest friends. But you've got that, and they are really good listeners, really good talkers. You can kind of talk something through with them. You don't maybe have the same kind of taste in films or something, and so you don't really enjoy, you know, hitting the night, having a night out, hitting the town. As you Scottish pastors are prone to do.
I see you are well familiar with our way.
So I think it's fine. I just have been doing some reading in this area recently and recognized there is a place for the enjoyable friend. They're not so close, but they're the enjoyable friend. There's a place for those folks as well. It doesn't have to all be the, you know, deep, you know, really, really close friends, and we've shared everything together.
Go, Phil. We're awaiting now.
I've set you up, mate.
Cheers, Sheridan. I think it comes back to my original challenge to us all to really reflect really well on where we spend our relational energy, and just, you know, almost like try a few things. I think the important thing for me is we do have those kind of different layers of intimacy, if you like. Where those friends come from, you're absolutely right, Glenn. You know, the word friend covers such a broad range of things. And just reflecting on what Sheridan says, I've got some friends who know almost everything about me. I've got friends also in my kind of, maybe not in my right inner circle, but my next circle, who I think there's a line in the book about saying every court needs its solemn advisors, but it also needs a jester or two. And I've got a couple of mates who I've known for like 20 years. We just have a load of fun together. And the conversation very rarely, I've tried a few times to kind of scratch between the surface, but there's no going there. And I go, you know what? I'm still going to, you know, have a load of fun with you. And that's absolutely fine. And sometimes for a bit of light relief, that's great. Yeah. I think the other thing I'd really encourage us to do is have friends who are different from us. And I think I think one of the beautiful things about church, just one of the few places left in society where this happens, where you've got people who are older and younger, have friends of different generations. That's so biblical. You know that with Moses, Jethro and Joshua, these beautiful intergenerational friendships, Paul, Timothy, you know, just these huge richness in the Bible around intergenerational stuff. So important. But also in a divided and broken world, I think one of the ways we find healing, and I think the church is the antidote to this, is being friends with people we disagree with, being friends with people of different backgrounds, stories, races, ethnicities, you know, the religions, the richness that comes from having people of different perspectives. And my, you know, my biblical basis for that is I'm convinced that that Jesus was so unbelievably strategic in how he chose his 12. You know, my premise is I think seven of the 12 knew each other before Jesus called them fishermen from Bethsaida. And then within the five were these just curveballs. You know, you've got Matthew, the tax collector, who was a little mockhead, the most hated type of tax collector. And then you've got Simon the Zealot, who wanted to kill tax collectors. And you just, Jesus knew what he was doing. And I think there's that sense in which in a world which says cancel people who think differently from you, I think Jesus' model is to create friendship circles where we have people who we disagree well with. And all of those things, you know, where those fit in your circles of intimacy, in some ways it doesn't matter. But I love, Glenn, what you expressed there around the various circles of friendship you have, because of the various spheres of influence and fun and areas that we find those friends in is just so important.
Good. Oh, we could carry this on forever.
I thought you had another question.
I was going to say you had a second question.
No, I do have a second question, but I'm kind of wanting to. We'll just ask the second question. So, this is tangentially related, I think, to what we've been talking about, because we've talked mostly about how our leaders might think more about friendship, how they would think more about friendship for themselves, and the importance of that, and how significant it is. Phil, you touched on this idea that I think I called a kind of culture of friendship. I think you used a different word, but the idea of creating those kind of cultures of friendship in our church communities, how would we go about doing that? What does that look like?
I mean, back to how do you create a culture of anything, isn't it, really? And I think my reading and how I've sort of seen good cultures created, first of all, we talk about it and tell stories. I think stories create cultures. So we tell stories of how friendships are formed and how other places are doing it. And we talk about our friends and we preach about it and we run stuff on it. But we also model it. So we kind of try and we talk about with it, you know, if none of our sermons as leaders mention friends, that's possibly a challenge. But also if kind of we're not, you know, seen to be and not creating and not turning up to things at all. And if you run a social event at your church and don't turn up, there's possibly a problem. But I think there's also some really cool things that I've seen done to kind of help this within churches. One of those kind of locally, my wife is a preacher's widow at the weekends. So I preach in a different church almost every Sunday. Ooh. And so Danny is often left here kind of on her own. So she needs a little hobby to kind of, you know, put stuff into practice. So what she did for a year, she wrote down a list of every single person in our church, not massive church, 120, something like that. And so she wrote down a list of everyone and said, in a year, can I get them all around for lunch? And can I strategically introduce people who don't yet know each other, who she thinks they might get on? I think God's the great connector. I think Danny's also, you know, second to God in that ability. And she just, my kids hated it because they basically had the same meal. but over the course of a year, she succeeded. And she said the most rewarding thing was the next Sunday, seeing people who'd never really talked to each other kind of connect. And so some of that stuff. But also, I would say, I think there's just, one of the most rewarding things over the last year has been seeing, reflecting on the poverty of conversation around friendship in the church. Since we've done the book, we've done a video series on Right Now Media. In July, Sheridan's Friendship Lab comes out, which you should all run. It's like a kind of alpha course for friendship. Get involved, find it. Sheridan can give you details, put them in the chat. So important, whatever we do do it. I think for all of us as church leaders to raise the volume on friendship. And just had the most wonderful feedback from a church you've just gone through, the best of friends of the church, that, you know, the difference it had made to that church family, primarily kind of within their church family. This was a church that have 25% would be kind of Iranian refugees, but the difference that it made forming bonds within that church, the leader said, had been extraordinary. And I think that was nothing magical about the book or the video series. It was just because they'd begun to raise the volume. And then as an evangelist, we're not here to talk about mission, Glenn, you said earlier. There's two of us, so that's half the majority. But really clearly, hear us well on this. You don't become friends with people to convert them. We become friends for all the reasons we've talked about, and we're made in the image of the relational God. Most people, missiologically, who come to faith do so through a friend, a neighbour, a colleague, or a family member. The long-term fruit of us being great friends will be that people come to faith. And that's another real reason to press into it. But creating those cultures, so important.
Yeah. That doesn't have to... I can't help myself. But that point about not becoming friends to convert people, right? That's become like, that's that we've raised the volume on that. And that's really important, right? Because we shouldn't do that. But the truth is, I also want all my friends to use Apple products because they are the best types of computer products.
Don't
and
open
you should
up
use
that
them.
Conversation.
No. But here's the reality. Like, I don't feel ashamed about the fact that I would want my friends to use good quality computers that I have proven over 20 years actually work, right? Well, do you know what? I've proven over nearly 30 years that Jesus is a good idea in my life. I'm quite keen on telling that with my friends. Anyway, sorry. Right, I'll stop now. Share them.
Yep. And just on that, the fact is that if we really love our friend, we know that the thing that's going to help them the most is not going to be a self-help program. It's going to be an inner change from the very Spirit of God when He comes in and transforms your life because you've bowed the knee to Christ. So absolutely, that's where friendship and evangelism fit in for me, is that somebody to talk to, depend on, grow with and enjoy. You are going to grow to be your best, most divinely called self when you have a relationship with God. Yeah. With everything that Phil has said in terms of developing a relationship, a culture of friendship within the church, I'll just throw one more in, and that's teach the congregation, teach our people, and model it ourselves to ask better questions. We are so impoverished for conversation, and if we just teach each other some great questions to ask, we will go deeper with each other and we will rise above just the general chit chat that happens around the week tea and biscuits after the sermon, right? You know, and so there is a tool that we've got, and if you would like that, Phil mentioned it before, so it's a free download, friendshiplab.org, and it's three categories of questions that help you move from acquaintance to casual friend to friend to close friend. And they get more and more intimate as you keep on going down the list. So there's three groups of 12 questions. But we just need to have a genuine interest in other people. And the amount of times where I've run out of questions because, you know what, there's nothing coming back at me. And if there were just some other questions coming back, here's a great one to ask. What three things would your perfect weekend have? Phil and I, as we've been doing a series of speaking engagements about this, we've been doing them together, and I'm asking Phil some of these questions as we're getting up on the stage.
I'm changing the answer every time to keep it.
Well, I'm not asking the same question twice. We are doing this in real time. We're getting to know each other. The problem is that I asked him about, you know, what was the last book, song, or film that brought a tear to his eye, and he said Home Alone. Man, I thought we were developing a friendship. I just don't know where to go with that one. Those kinds of questions, right? That get into...
Oh, man, Marley reunites a family. It's beautiful.
Here's a tissue, mate. Here's a tissue. But asking those kinds of questions and having a culture of that will help us to do everything that we're talking about here. Ask better questions.
That's so helpful, Sheridan. Thank you. I should say that we have a printout of that stuck on our wall in our house. The questions.
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were going to say picture of Home Alone.
No,
you're all by yourself there. You are home alone on that one, mate.
So we're going to wrap up because, you know, we're going to be on here for hours otherwise, aren't we? Which is really lovely for us, but maybe not so great for the people listening. So I'm just really struck by what you're saying about the amount of people who are lonely at the beginning, really. And so I'm listening to this and it sounds amazing and I feel really inspired. And actually I'm kind of thinking, I wish I was part of that conversation because they sound like they're having a fun time. Kind of, where do I start? What's the thing that I can do? You know, friends aren't jumping out the woodwork at me. I'm not really quite sure. I don't really feel like I'm great at asking questions. I'm a little bit shy. What do I do? You know, where do I start to make a change? That's probably his question.
I think my first piece of advice, this is the classic Christian answer. I would say we don't often pray about our friends that we're going to make. And so, you know, for me, as I've looked at how Jesus chose his friends, is he spent a night praying. I'm not sure before I realized that a couple of years ago, I'd never prayed, Lord, would you help me make a friend in this situation? Mm-hmm. I think I'm praying it a lot more now when I kind of go into rooms where I don't know anybody. I feel, as I look at scripture, I think that God is the great connector. Mm-hmm. I love the moment where Jesus is on the cross and he's in physical agony and spiritual separation from the Father is imminent, and he is about to, you know, he's dying, and he still says in that moment, you know, Mother, here is your son, and says of John, you know, here is your mother, and he's making connections even as he's dying. I think that's we gloss over that, don't we, in the magic of the beauty of the Easter story. So I think that's the first thing is praying. I think the second thing is trying to find common ground wherever we can. And that's to some extent down to kind of Sheridan's asking great questions. And my favorite question is what keeps you busy when you're not here at this time? So again, I met a guy for the first time at church on Sunday, he was just on his own, went up to him and said, what keeps you busy? And we had a conversation about gardening. I'm a terrible gardener. I told that to him. He really liked it. But next time I see Richard, I will go and say, how are your daffodils? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's that kind of trying to unearth some of that common ground. Mm-hmm. And then seeing where that goes with the kind of levels of intentionality. But I think the other thing I would encourage us with before I pass over to Sheridan is sometimes I think we rule ourselves out of friendship because of a personality type. And friends are for everyone, not just those who are really extroverted. In fact, sometimes I'm actually a bit of a closet introvert and people judge me and say that I'm an extrovert. I'm not. But actually introverts make the best friends. Statistically, if you look at introverts are far better at maintaining deep and meaningful relationships than extroverts, who often have lots of mates but very few close friends. Both of us have our both challenges and advantages when it comes to making friends. But being able to make friends is not a personality type. And we need to make sure that we, again, creating cultures, talk about that and inspire people around some of those areas.
Yeah. That's great, Phil. Thank you.
So good. So for somebody who really was in the situation you're talking about, Lisa, I would actually say, once you've done the praying, once you've done everything that Phil has just talked about, I'd give two bits of advice. Start where you are. So you start with the people around you. There is something called the 25-minute rule, that we are more likely to stay in touch with those people who live within a 25-minute radius to us. That, funnily enough, that radius can actually be 25 minutes walking, riding, public transport, or driving. It's actually a psychological barrier, but start where you are. Start in your workplace, start in your church. In your church, you have people, and I'm speaking in general here rather than church leaders, but you've already got people who you're like-minded with. You've got a shared set of values. You've got all the structures in place to meet weekly and then even bi-weekly, because you've got a Wednesday night home group you can join. There's so many things that the church offers the world, even just sociologically when it comes to friend making. So start where you are in your local place. If you are a mum and you're a number of young toddlers, then start with the toddlers group. Start where you are. Number two, Yes, as much as we want to have friends that are different to us, if somebody is really in the situation you're talking about, Lisa, I would say start with who you are as well. Mm. And that would be your identity and your interests. So your identity, answer as many ways as you can the I am question. I am a. And it might be that you are a woman. And so you might be able to follow that then through to women's groups in the church. I am a mum. There might be toddlers groups you can join. I am creative. Maybe there's some sort of artistic communities you can join. So follow the identities through to a group and the interests through to a group. So start with who you are, start with where you are, and then look for the spark as you're talking. As you're doing that small talk, don't let anybody say small talk is bad. Small talk leads to big talk. We just got to give it some time. And then look for the spark, and that's actually an acronym. Write this one down. Spark is, and this is spark with a C, spark, which is S for similarity, P for pastimes, i.e. you like similar things that you do on the weekend. A is availability. Sometimes people do not have space for another friend. It's not you, it's them. R is responsiveness. They actually, when you talk to them, they're interested in hearing about you and want to find out more. So there's a responsiveness there that's going on. And C is compatible values. So start where you are, start with who you are, look for the spark.
That's just amazing. Well, guys, I mean, it's just been awesome having you on, and just fun as well, enjoyable. We, of course, will put in our show notes all the many books and podcasts and different things that are available to individuals and to churches, because generally they're like gold dust. So we want to encourage people to engage with those things and use them and build friendships, and maybe like, we could just become more friendly. I was hoping to be your friend, Glenn, but you live too far away, so apparently that's not now possible.
We can't be friends anymore, Lisa. Oh,
it's
no.
It's disappointing, isn't it?
But if we've got another to this podcast, doesn't it?
If we've got another 20
minutes. I know how to go and make some more friends now, so it's all right. I'll just replace Lisa with someone else.
We can talk about cross-distance friendship if you want to.
I think we need to do another podcast.
Yeah, it's a separate one. Guys, thank you so much for all your time. It's been brilliant.
It's been so much fun.